Welcome to the Space Show, Bernard.
Great to be here.
What is Spacehab?
Well, Spacehab is probably the first company that has looked at commercializing space. Back in 1983, the founders were visionaries. Then they saw that in the future that there would be more private involvement, industry involvement in space, taking its probably example from the telecommunications industry. It began to look at ways in which to exploit the opportunities for microgravity research.
And was this idea readily accepted by NASA at the start?
Well, you know, new ideas are never readily accepted, but I think that when the founders originally presented our single module, which was an augmentation of the middeck for the shuttle, that it then became very acceptable, because if you've ever been in the shuttle, it's only two decks and they're very small, and our module literally doubled the size of the operating capacity of the shuttle. So from that standpoint, you know, NASA said, you know, we got to have these. And so since that time, we have grown from a single module to a double module that has both research and logistics. We had several flights to the Mir space station where we provided water and food and things like that to the station, plus equipment. And in 2000, we'll have our inaugural flight of the research module, research double module, which will be a full-up module for conducting microgravity research in space.
How big are these modules?
They're about 15 feet in diameter and about 30 feet, the largest one, in length. So it's able to accommodate rack size payloads, anything from, you know, something from the size of 1 or 2 feet to the size of a rack, which will typically be 4 feet by 8 feet. And we can accommodate a variety of different payloads in terms of power and data. And we can also beam it right down to the hearts of the science community. If there was a researcher that wanted to do his research from his office, he can actually do it on the internet with our communication system.
And what sort of science is done aboard the Spacehab?
We have the capability of doing just about everything. We've had experiments where we have flown plants. In fact, we have an experiment coming up in January with the Chilean government where they are flying ladybugs plus some other what's called aphids and wheat in a nice experimental package, and that'll fly. That's a locker-sized payload. We have furnaces in which we do material processing, and in fact, over the research that's been done in the last 30 years, there are over 400 new alloys, you know, combinations of materials that can be done in space and have been discovered in space that we're now using in a lot of processes here on Earth.
So it does have an application back here on Earth.
It definitely has an application, and definitely it benefits us here on Earth. I'm a medical doctor by training, and so my emphasis is really in studying the effects of weightlessness on the human body, and that knowledge then can be translated to some helpful benefits here. And I'll give you an example. Every astronaut that goes up in space loses bone, about 1% of their bone per month. So for the cosmonauts who have spent long periods of time, and Andy Thomas, who is Australian-born, who spent, about 4 to 5 months in space, lost about 5%. Okay. We call that osteoporosis. Well, guess what? One of the biggest medical problems that we have in all the countries of the world is osteoporosis. And so we have teams of scientists who are trying to solve problems like that, and when they do, solve those problems for astronauts, and when they do, we can translate that knowledge directly to benefit the women of this world.
And what other medical benefits are coming out of this?
We're doing some areas, other areas is in protein crystal growth and purifying drugs in space, because when you go into space without gravity, you can reduce the effects of sedimentation, convection, and buoyancy, which is involved in just about every process, whether it's material processing or creating a new drug. And so if you take that out of the equation, that's involved in the processing of that drug, you end up with pure compounds. You end up with crystals that would allow you to elucidate structures of things like proteins, which are used every day by our body to carry medicines to where they're needed. So if we know those structures, then we open the door to things like designer drugs for chemotherapy, for patients who need it for cancers and things like that. And you can also use those same drugs to fight illnesses and some of the viral problems that we have around the world, including AIDS. A lot of that research is being done by investigators in microgravity laboratories, just like the space have.
Do you see the day when medicines, pharmaceuticals, would be made in space, or do you just see this as being a research that tells us how to make them, and then we can learn better ways to make them on the ground?
I think when we initially started this whole area, getting the pharmaceutical industry interested in space, we thought one day that we might have manufacturing plants. But what we have found is that we have gained so much knowledge about how a crystal or like a protein crystal or a material is formed in space, that we can just bring that knowledge back down, modify the things that we do on the ground based on that perfect template that we develop in space. And that's kind of the way in which we're going. And I think you'll see that happening in not only in pharmaceuticals, but also in materials processing, because it gives us a nice view, a nice picture of what perfection looks like, and then we come back down, and if we get close to it, then we end up with better material.
What do you mean exactly by materials processing?
Let me give you an example. I think that's a real visible one that I was talking with a material scientist colleague friend of mine. Suppose we could take something like steel, and we can, instead of having it solid, we can introduce very discrete holes in it, kind of like styrofoam, kind of like a sponge, right? If you try to do that here on Earth, it's very difficult to do that, right? What's the benefit of that? Well, you end up with a material that's strong, but it's light because it has these pockets in it. And you can't do that because of buoyancy and sedimentation and the weight of the material and all that. You can take steel in space, make it molten, apply a special gas, and what happens, it ends up bubbling up and being just like foam, and you bring that material back down and you can cut it for the holes for boats or for support structures, and you end up with a material that has almost the same strength as, say, solid steel here, but much lighter. And you can use that in the automobile industry, in the construction of buildings, and it would just change the whole way in which we view using materials here on Earth.
And there's no way we could do this here on Earth.
There are ways, and again, that has two applications. If we find that, and we've done just limited experiments, if we find that we can produce better materials in space, then that may be one example where we would produce materials in space. But I think the latter is going to be true, that we're going to find out better ways in which to do it here on the ground. Because, of course, it's expensive going into space and bringing things back and forth. So if we can just use that knowledge here and make the process better, in the long run, it'll be more economically feasible.
And you mentioned a new module that you're developing. What's that going to be used for? How will that help you in the way that the existing space have doesn't?
Well, the module that we have right now is a single module, which I said about 15 feet by 15 feet. That does limit our capability in terms of the amount of research that gets done on each flight. Now what we have done is increase that capacity, double that capacity, that length, along with the data. Plus it's going to be upgraded to take standardized computer interfaces. We will be interconnecting with the internet, so it will add to our science capabilities and make it much easier for academic institutions and universities to get involved, along with governments that want to be involved that in the past had no opportunity to do that.
Well, Bernard, you mentioned you're a doctor and obviously very much involved in this project. Would you like to actually fly on the shuttle yourself?
Well, you'll be surprised. I have flown two shuttle missions. I'm an astronaut also. And so all of this information I've been delivering to you comes firsthand. I have actually flown those payloads that I've talked about on a couple of missions. My longest flight was 12 days, and it was wonderful. And what I also am trying to do, being involved with this company, SpaceHab, I'm also involved with universities and trying to encourage our young people to go into this field because it's important. In the 21st century, this is going to be a major industry. And if we're going to be part of it, if Australian kids are going to be part of it, then they need to start being educated and getting knowledge in it now.
Well, Bernard, thank you very much for joining us on the Space Show.
Thank you.